Hello, everybody, and welcome on this fine Tuesday afternoon here with my friend, Greg Johnson, CEO of WebCheck, and myself, Earl Foote. I am founder, CEO of Nexus IT. We are a white glove IT support, cybersecurity, and cloud firm. And I've asked my good friend, Greg Johnson, to join us here today. Greg, I'm going to introduce you, you know, here officially in just a minute, but I want to say, you know, thank you for being here, for sharing your wealth of knowledge and your experience over a very illustrious career in cybersecurity and InfoSec, in compliance and data governance, cyber governance. We're going to get into all these topics, but first of all, just a couple of housekeeping items. We will have a Q&A session here, an open Q&A session at the end. You know, Greg and I will talk here, do a bit of a fireside chat for about a half hour, and then we'll go ahead and open up to an open Q&A session. Please, you know, you can begin to put your questions into the chat on whatever platform you're joining us from. We realize that there are attendees joining from LinkedIn and Facebook and YouTube. And so welcome to all of you. Feel free to interact. We will try to keep an eye on those chat questions. And if we can address them as we go, we'll do that. And then we'll have a nice, you know, open Q&A at the end. So really quick, I just wanted to also mention that I will be doing another one of these on December 8th with my good friend, Nate Spears, co-founder of ClearSource. Nate is perhaps one of the most thoughtful leaders that I know who thinks about leadership and his team at depths that I can only dream of and that I've rarely seen within business leaders. And he's got an amazing amount of insight. And so I invite you all to join us again on December 8th at 3 p.m. with my friend Nate Spears and I. But for the moment, I'm here with Greg Johnson. Greg is the CEO of the world-class penetration testing and cyber security services company, WebCheck Security. Greg started WebCheck Security after serving on several executive teams and with a long sales career and management career in technology companies such as WordPerfect, Novell, Security Metrics, Align, and Secuvant. A BYU graduate, Greg began his career in the days of 64K, 5.2 5-inch floppy drives, and Mac 128Ks.
I think you were in diapers then, Earl.
That's entirely possible. that may be absolutely accurate. As the industry has evolved, Greg has moved into the cyber arena and provided his clients with solutions surrounding compliance, digital forensics, data breach, and response. And in 2016, earned his PCIP or PCI professional designation. In several VP of business development roles, Greg consulted, guided, and educated companies in compliance guidelines and certifications for standards such as PCI, HIPAA, ISO, NIST, SOC 1, SOC 2, GDPR, CCPA, FedRAMP, etc. When Greg is not providing cyber solutions for his clients, he can be found spending time with his awesome wife, Kelly, playing with his grandchildren, or rehearsing and performing with the world-renowned Tabernacle Choir on Temple Square. Many people may not know, but Greg has a very gifted voice and musical talent, and his family has a lot of musical talent within the family as well. So, welcome, Greg. Welcome everybody here with us today. So happy to have you.
Thank you. I'm just thrilled to be here, Earl. I always say that you are a leader of integrity, and you're my friend, and we partner well together, but you've got musical talent too. I mean, I see that Eddie Van Halen replica there on the back wall. So maybe we'll have to talk about that. But Earl's an extraordinary bass player and guitar player, and plays with a fun band as well.
I appreciate that. I'm average by all definitions, but I have fun. That's what's important. So Greg, this is a very interesting complicated topic that we're going to discuss today. And it's something that honestly, I think you and I, because we get these behind the scenes, inside glimpses into companies here in our local market and throughout, you know, throughout the country and even sometimes worldwide, we get these inside glimpses that the public doesn't get into data security, into InfoSec, into governance and compliance. And sometimes it's hard not to be scared by it all, right? But let's talk about this. So tell us a little bit about what cyber governance is and cyber hygiene. Help the viewers understand those concepts, if you could.
Sure, I'll do that. Well, you know, most people think that cybersecurity, for example, is an IT problem. And as you know, Earl, it goes to the board, it goes to policy, practice, and procedure. It's not just an IT problem. As we were chatting earlier, and if I may, Earl, I'll just bring up one of my screens here.
Yeah, of course.
To illustrate this and to kind of seed the thought for what is governance, I mean, think of cybersecurity program management in an organization. And most organizations don't have it. In fact, Earl, an interesting statistic that I looked up just today, preparatory to coming on, is how many organizations really have CISOs? And do you know, Earl, that in the Fortune 500, only 38% of all of those massive companies even have a CISO? And we'll talk about what a CISO is and what they do. It's a chief information security officer, presumably somebody who's at the board level. But only 38% of those very large companies have them. And yet, almost every company needs some form of cyber governance. Well, as the viewers can see in this webcast, this is representative of just some, and I emphasize some, components of cybersecurity. Cybersecurity is kind of like Thanksgiving at the Johnson household. But typically, we gather at my mom's house, and this is appropriate for Thanksgiving because here we are, right? And there's always these wonderful pies. You got to have Ben's pumpkin pie that he made from scratch. And my sister Julie makes these amazing apple pies, two or three different kinds. And somebody will bring the big Costco pie, right? The big pumpkin pie. And somebody's going to make bread pudding. You've got all these wonderful things that make up the Thanksgiving feast. And cybersecurity is no different. You've got everything from incident response planning to security awareness to endpoint protection, identity and access and authentication, disaster recovery, and just the actual policies and documenting them themselves. There's so many components to that, and the reality is that most organizations are just trying to keep their technology up and running properly, right? You know this, Earl, because you guys do it the best in the industry. But who's going to govern and manage all of these other things? And so when we talk about governance, we're talking truly about real cyber program management and accountability within an organization.
So I think you mentioned something very interesting there, Greg, right from the beginning, and that's that you said this isn't only an IT problem. In fact, it's a business problem. In today's world, it is a business problem that the entire business unit needs to look at, be aware of, be mindful of, and be planning for, and be strategic with. And I think that organizations that, I hate to use the word fail, but the reality is organizations that fail or neglect to take that type of an approach are organizations who are going to end up in the news for, you know, having allowed the data of their clients, of their employees, you know, to be compromised. And so cyber governance, cybersecurity is no longer just a problem that the executive team says, IT department, you guys deal with that, right? That's your thing. We don't want to know anything about it. That's annoying. It's boring. It's ugly. It kind of, you know, it just bugs us. So you deal with it. And if something goes wrong, we're going to, you know, we're going to yell and scream at you, and we're going to point the finger at you. But the reality is that stakes are so high in today's world, and the bad actors out there and the hackers, you know, the cyber criminals, they are so incredibly active that these have to be considerations that the entire business leadership unit, even at the, as you mentioned, at the level of the board, are considering, are thinking about, are asking themselves, how are we being good stewards of the data that we hold? How are we keeping our proprietary data, our client data, our HR data, our financial data? How are we keeping that all safe and secure? And the reality is it becomes insanely complex. When we look at this pie chart you've shared with us here, there's so many components. And as you mentioned, this is just kind of scratching the surface. And so I think you and I wanted to talk today a little bit about some of the biggest challenges we see organizations face when they start to think about this concept of cyber governance. And so let's begin to, you know, kind of talk about that a little bit. What are some of the primary challenges as you interact with prospects and clients? What are some of the primary challenges that you see, you know, businesses facing as they're trying to be good stewards of their data?
Sure. Fantastic question, Earl, and a great way to kick that off. Let me frame that in two parts, if I may. One would be, what have we kind of learned with COVID, and what are the challenges now that we've seen organizations are facing with this decentralized perimeter? Fair enough?
Yeah.
So let's drive into that. And then number two, and I think you and I are going to do a presentation on this later on in February with your elite CISO group. You may want to mention that on this webcast, but I'd like to share a few data points from maturity assessments that we've done on organizations large and small, and kind of the common glaring denominator in a lot of them. Does that sound like a good place to start, those two elements?
Fantastic. Yes, let's do it.
Okay, fantastic. So you said something, Earl, that I'm going to key off of here. Another thing that I looked up earlier this morning as we were preparing is I found a really good article about some of the key things that we've learned, and there are six things. And do you know that one of them, and you mentioned, Earl, about cybersecurity going up to the board level, being endorsed by the board, and meaning the C-suite, of course, as well, being owned by the C-suite and the board, and being driven at that level, right? But yet, what do you think this article said? It said that one of the six key failings that we've learned in organizations are that CISOs, which again is your chief information security officer, have second class standing with the board. And then that just means that they're not getting their voices heard. And as you know, Earl, you guys augment or even provide the cybersecurity of the IT services for companies. And often it's hard to get your voice heard, right? Hey, you guys really need to have, for example, endpoint protection. You got nothing, you're being phished, you know. You know how that conversation goes, right? You could probably tell us stories. Well, I found that interesting that this is CISO Magazine. One of their findings is that CISOs have second class standing with the board. So that's one of the problems that have been coming to the fore is we weren't prepared, right? And one of the reasons we weren't prepared is that the executive level wasn't taking ownership of that. But there's five other issues. So one, I just mentioned it, inadequate planning and preparation. So, you know, you talk about red teaming, blue teaming, and tabletop exercises. Well, most organizations don't have that. They don't sit down and say, what would happen today if our business went down because of a security breach? Or even worse, what if we leaked data? So there was an actual data breach, and we had to notify our customers. What does that look like? And most organizations haven't thought that through. And that plays into the second facet that I was going to talk about. So we'll come to that in a minute. The other four things that the pandemic has exposed, and you'll laugh at this, Earl, problems with patching. Right? I mean, what do you see when you go into organizations as far as managing just the vulnerable, you know, Apache server? And tell us about that.
Oh, yeah. Well, I guess, first of all, as you've mentioned, in most scenarios, what we've found is if there is even an IT or security consideration, right, there's been inadequate planning and preparation. And so oftentimes that patching, you know, concept hasn't even really hit the radar. And so when we do these risk assessments, these gap assessments that we do, you know, several every single week for, you know, prospective clients, they're asking us to take a look at their, you know, their infrastructure and what's working and what's not working and where they're potentially vulnerable. You know, we find these scenarios where they haven't been patched for, you know, for months or for years, whether those be critical servers, critical databases, applications, file servers, or their user, you know, devices, user desktops. Or you find, you know, you mentioned that Linux Apache server. Linux is, you know, always introduces its own little interesting, what I want to call it, variables, you know, into the equation, because you've got open source platforms that aren't necessarily, you know, kept up to date or patched. And you might be running, if you're running, you know, an older version of Apache, you may not be able to run on the newest versions of a Linux operating system. And therefore, you know, and you can't patch and get to the latest Linux operating system. And therefore, that server is significantly vulnerable, not to mention that the Apache version is significantly vulnerable. And then upgrading the Linux version and the Apache version, you know, is a massive undertaking. It usually entails some significant downtime in the process. And, you know, whatever you're hosting, if it's a web app or a website or some SaaS platform or whatever it is that you're hosting there, you may break it in the process. And so you schedule this maintenance window to do this Linux server, you know, patch and patch your, you know, bring your Apache up to a current, you know, version. And in the process, you know, and you're thinking, okay, we need this 2-hour, 3-hour maintenance window to do this process. We're going to do it from 1 a.m. to 4 a.m. And then everything is going to be honky-dory. Well, you might break your web app in the process, right? Or your website. And suddenly, you know, what was supposed to be a 2-hour maintenance window is turned into 48 and 72 hours of potentially a massive SaaS platform being down, right? And so oftentimes, IT departments sit there and go, I don't want to take the risk. Like, I realize we're in a massive risk of you know, a cyber risk here, but I don't want to take the risk of trying to patch. So which, you know, the worst of two evils, which way do I go, right? It's a hard question, but yeah, it's an interesting proposal for sure.
It is a huge issue and a huge problem. So clearly you've seen that. So continuing with some of the other issues is, and you've seen this over the years, continued reliance on perimeter defense. When COVID happened, what happened to all of these organizations? People had to go home and start working, right? And Earl gets calls from hundreds of people saying, hey, you need to set us up with VPNs and all this stuff. Well, I think, and this is another discussion in and of itself, right? But people realized that they just didn't have the contingency plan in place to start going off of a perimeter identity authentication and access policy and zero trust versus reliance on the good old Fortinet firewall, because suddenly they're not coming in through the Fortinet firewall, or even if they could, because they didn't support, you know, 1,000 VPN connections, you know, things had to decentralize and change. So again, that's, we could talk for an hour about that, right, Earl?
Oh, totally.
But here's another one that COVID exposed, and that is insufficient visibility and controls, right? So you know, often if we're implementing the IT infrastructure, there's not sufficient visibility into logs and sufficient alerts and technologies that let us know when there are problems happening in the organization. And then finally, kind of a lack of agility. Corporations realize that sometimes their policies and practices didn't allow them to pivot as quickly as they needed to, and that had to change. So those six things were some real vulnerabilities that were exposed by COVID. Now, that let's tie that back to governance before we move on to that next segment I alluded to, and that's because most of those companies didn't have cyber governance. They didn't have tabletop exercises. They didn't have incident planning. Well, that comes neatly into item number two. What is it that we're seeing at WebCheck Security with regards to cyber governance in general as one of the biggest holes? So I pulled up, Earl, the last four cyber maturity assessments that we did, right? And let me just explain how we do those. Now, there are many frameworks out there. Often customers will come to you, Earl, and they'll say, hey, we need a SOC 2. And then we get involved and we help moving them down that path. And a lot of it involves technology that you need to manage for them. Other, it involves finding the gaps, which is what we can do. And then we can bring in a partner that does the certifying, like Arc360, and they'll give them their SOC 2 certificate. But that's a journey, right? So we have a generic kind of a high level. We call it a security or a maturity assessment or a cyber hygiene assessment. It's kind of like a litmus test. How good are you today? And it gives you a risk score. So if your risk is high, the maturity score inversely is going to be low, right? And then those two eventually have to meet. We go towards low risk and a high maturity score. So in the last four assessments that we did, and by the way, we barring any other frameworks that the corporation needs, like a NIST, if they're working with defense contractors or with the government directly, or PCI for payment card industry, and of course HIPAA can always be an issue, and that's important. But we'll use the Center for Internet Security Top 20 Controls, or the CIS-20, which has become a really practical framework, particularly for medium enterprise and even smaller enterprises, but can be very practical at a higher level as well.
Totally.
And the point is, I pulled up the last four assessments that we did, and you know, we should have done a poll here, folks. What do you think was the common denominator? And I'm just going to share, if I may. I've cut and paste almost verbatim what Kurt, one of our assessors, had put in these assessments. So let me bring that up for you. And let me just say this, this data came from a very large equipment dealer out in the Northeast. It came from a very large, well-known realtor organization. It came from a very large developer that does contests and websites for a well-known gas convenience chain across the U.S. And several others. One was even a very small organization that had no firewall. They were all working from home, including the CEO, and that was just the nature of their distributed business. But this was it. They all had a glaring hole in incident response and management. And it's funny because we could almost cut and paste this across all four assessments. There are several policies missing. We recommend the following policies and procedures. So none of them had an adequate information security policy, period, end of story. And of course, the incident response policy and procedure. And Earl, as you get into organization, you start talking about that. They'll say, well, that can't be that hard. Okay, great. Tell me about your PR response. And they go, oh, yeah, I guess we never really thought about that before. So that's all part of incident response, public relations, and legal attorney-client privilege and advisement and so forth. Vulnerability management policy and procedure. They didn't have that. Disaster recovery, business continuity policy and procedure. They didn't have that. And an acceptable use policy. So with all these people working at home, Earl, how are organizations locking down their laptops or their systems or creating a virtual environment so they can't be going out and downloading stuff that has malware all over the place? That's a real issue, right?
Yes, it is.
So these, almost verbatim, this is a small segment. Obviously, it's not all the detail of the report, but that was in every single one of these assessments that we did. And so I think, if anything, one of the biggest issues with governance is lack of incident response policy, the ongoing management of an incident response policy, and the vetting of it to see if it's adequate for the problems that may occur.
Yeah. Very, so many amazing, wonderful, nuggets there, Greg. I really appreciate you sharing this, detailed experience that you've had over the years, and with your recent interactions. Some of the things that really stood out to me here that I think are really interesting and are the same common variables that we see. You mentioned, and this kind of blows my mind, that out of Fortune 500 companies, only 38% of them have a CISO, the Chief Information Security Officer, that is overseeing the data security practices of that organization. And we're talking about big companies here. We're not talking about, the small and medium sized businesses that are along the Wasatch Front and the Wasatch back here, or, in Utah or down south in St. George, or, in the Intermountain region. We're talking about big companies, right? And you mentioned something very important, and that is that IT right now does not have a voice at the table. And that is a big problem. Cybersecurity and cyber governance don't have a voice at the table. And that's one of the biggest challenges that we see and that you're seeing, and that our friends and counterparts that are CIOs and CISOs and CTOs and IT managers and directors of IT and VPs of IT and all those things, right? All of our colleagues are having a major problem getting the leadership business unit and the board to understand why it's important and why they need budget to address it, right? And I think that's one of the biggest challenges we're seeing, aside from the fact that in many organizations, particularly small and medium-sized organizations, that there's just, they honestly just don't understand what the risk is and what putting together a solid plan is. And that's a significant, significant problem for them to address. So maybe let's transition. We have a few more minutes of dialogue here. And let's transition and begin to talk about, what are some potential solutions to all of these problems that we're seeing, of, first of all, why is cybersecurity even important to us? How do we come up with a plan? How do we get, business leaders to listen to this and assign budget to it? And how do we then begin to execute plans? What are some ideas that you've got there, Greg?
Sure. And, I wish I had Harry Potter's magic wand, and we could solve the C-suite cyber issue. But until business owners or business operators realize that they own it, not you and or not their IT guys, right? That they have to own it and understand. Look, can I tell you a story real quick here that illustrates why this is so important, and maybe this will spur some action here. And I have to be careful how I say this, but I know of a large, successful SaaS company, keeping it very generic, that had...
keep it that way. Keep it in line.
This could be anything. This could be a lot of our clients, right?
Yes.
But they had a significant enough data breach that the FTC got involved, and there may or may not have been some fines and may or may not be coming down the pike. Their attorney, their cyber attorney, who happens to be a good friend of mine, stood in front of the FTC committee that was essentially leveling the censure against the CEO. They had censured him and said he's responsible. And And the cyber attorney very, you know, adroitly communicated his concern about this and said, look, why does the CEO own this? And there were many factors here. And they said, because there's no evidence that the CEO prior to the event communicated or did anything that encouraged cyber hygiene in the organization. And that's a powerful, powerful precedent that the business owner was deemed liable by the FTC because it wasn't because of what they'd done going forward. It's because of the lack of doing anything or the inaction that led up to the event. So just by being ignorant and by burying the head in the sand or sitting on our hands, it's not a strategy, right? We've already made a decision. But maybe backing up a little bit, Earl, and we're talking about governance. What is a CISO and why do organizations need them? And so really, a CISO, it's a senior level executive, or should be, within the organization that's responsible for establishing and maintaining the enterprise vision, a strategy, and a program to ensure that information assets and technologies are adequately protected, right? So this is the guy or gal who they have that experience. A lot of times they may have an MBA, but they understand the business. They understand governance. They understand cybersecurity. They know enough about technology that they can really kind of guide that cyber program. So that's the second solution, I guess, Earl, is organizations need to understand what is a CISO. And if they can't afford to hire one, and I get it, this is a problem, right? So CISOs command anywhere from, well, across the Wasatch Front, they may be able to hire them for $125,000 a year. But I guarantee you that the average across the nation is north of $150,000. And if you're living in the Bay or Manhattan, that's a $500,000 guy once you add in all the benefits and the bonuses and all that stuff. But that's not to deter organizations because they can rent one. They can lease one. We call it FISO at WebCheck Security, or Fractional Information Security Officer. And there are a lot of organizations that provide those services. So burying the head in the sand and doing nothing is not an option. They should come to you, for example, Earl, and say, well, help us out with this. And then you'll bring in a partner that can help them, and you'll help them as well. So that's the second thing, is get a CISO in whatever form. Does that make sense?
Totally.
whatever form that takes, right?
Yeah, even if it is fractional, as you've mentioned, or virtual, and that's the reality with, you know, if you're not a massive business, you probably don't have a full-time workload for a CISO. You probably need, you know, a few consulting hours per month. And when I'm talking a few, I guess it depends upon the size of organization. It might be, you might need 2 to 4, you might need 20, you might need 40, right? But, the reality is that, for affordable rates, you can actually begin to understand what your vulnerabilities are, what are proper governance practices, you know, putting together incident response plans and, you know, all that kind of stuff. And that's the thing that a lot of businesses don't necessarily understand, is they think that cyber governance, cybersecurity, it's a one-time event. Like, oh, you know, we're going to tackle that in 2021. And, you know, we're going to talk about that, and we're going to come up with a plan, and we're going to execute on that plan, and then we're good. Right. And the reality is it's an ongoing management process. Yeah. If you think you're good, you're going to be in really bad shape, you know, in a quick hurry. Unfortunately, the bad actors out there, the cyber criminals, they are evolving their tools and tactics at breakneck speeds, and therefore, you know, professionals who understand what they're doing and understand how to combat that need to be engaged in an ongoing management process, right?
Right. And just a couple of quick things here too, Earl, and I guess we're getting close to the time you wanted to open it up to questions, but one key thing that doesn't cost a ton of money, and I phrase that, there are many organizations that can run cyber assessments. Some of them are going to charge $20,000, But they don't have to. They're just conducting an assessment, starting with, for example, the maturity assessment I mentioned, using a common framework like CIS 20 that's digestible, implementation group one, which is, I guess, for immature or nascent organizations, and it can grow with the needs of the organization. That's a good place to start. We are advocates of at WebCheck Security of penetration tests, obviously, because we do them. They're easy to do. They're a little bit less expensive, but that doesn't take into account all of the other pieces of that pie that we showed earlier, right? Yeah. We can show where the holes are. Where can I pour the water through the sieve? Well, a pen test will test the perimeter and the internal and the SaaS platforms, mobile apps. We can even do some phishing. But the reality is, do you have an incident response policy, as we'd mentioned? Do you have software that protects against phishing and malware and other things? And as you know, we could go on with that. But that's a key part, is conducting a cyber maturity assessment, understanding, getting a baseline, and then prioritizing, even if you can only do so much with the budget this year, prioritizing it to have the most impact until we get to the next budget year. That's a good place to start.
Yeah, and that's actually one of the questions that we have here. What are maybe some of the four or five, you know, top action items that organizations can begin to take cyber governance, cybersecurity, you know, seriously? And so I would say, you know, and I think we're both agreeing on that, is, you know, your very first action is to perform a risk assessment, whether you feel the capabilities of doing that internally. And you've mentioned a very useful framework, the CIS 20. You know, if you feel that your team internally has the expertise to execute upon that internally, fantastic. If not, bring in an outside resource, right, that can do an in-depth analysis. And here's the thing, and you mentioned, you know, at the top of the hour here, we talked about this. This is not just an IT problem. It is a business problem. It's a legal problem, right? And so these vulnerability assessments or risk assessments, they're not just a penetration test. It's not just where are those holes in the sieve, right? It is, do you have the policies and procedures in place? Do you have the legal framework in place? Who is your cyber attorney? Do you have cyber insurance in place? You know, there's all these other business considerations that are outliers from the traditional IT, you know, department. And so business leaders have to be thinking about these things. And yeah, so number one, you know, start with that risk assessment. You know, figure out, what are we missing? What is a good best practices kind of framework, you know, that we should be following within this organization to be good stewards of our data? And you mentioned something really almost disturbing earlier, and that is that this is becoming such a problem that the legal ramifications for being negligent are getting, you know, are becoming quite significant. And I'm not just talking about at a business level. You know, we know now that state and government regulatory bodies and you know, even the state itself will pass down fines. But they can go after your personal assets if they deem that you as a business leader have been negligent in protecting the data of your clients and your employees. And so, you know, that multi-million dollar mansion on the hill could disappear if they deem that, you know, that they want to compel you to sell that by the court so that you can cover the damages. You know, it's becoming a significant situation, and it needs to get to the ears of more and more business leaders so they understand that this isn't just, I'm just going to tell, you know, the IT guy, whoever that is, if I call him, you know, because oftentimes, let's be honest, you know, the IT guy in some of our clients' organizations is the CFO, right? Or it's the receptionist at the front desk who happens to know a little bit about technology and can help people fix the printing problem, right? And so I'm passing the buck off to that person and saying, you're in charge of cybersecurity, right? And then I don't want to know anything else about it. And that is an approach that is going to land you in some problems. And so, number one, do that risk assessment. What would you recommend as a second item? One of the questions we've got here is a second item, a second action that should be taken in proper cyber governance.
Well, that kind of leads to a process that I was going to suggest. We have several clients where this exact scenario has played out. They're concerned, or one of their CEOs or COOs, somebody in the C-suite is concerned about cybersecurity. So they engage with us to do an assessment. What we do is we come in and say, this is great, but you're going to need help with this. You're going to need help implementing it. So ideally, let me give you an example. We recently engaged with a large manufacturer, and that manufacturer had a login portal for its partners and dealers and so forth as well, of the equipment that they make. So we went in, worked with the IT manager and the CFO, and it was great that the CFO was there in the initial discussion to at least get his head around where we were going with this and what we were doing. And then in subsequent discussions, he was able to bow out. So we engaged for the cyber assessment, delivered the assessment, made recommendations that were in a prioritized fashion. And incidentally, incident response is the first thing they need to work on because they're very exposed. And then at the same time, we engaged with them to do a penetration test. Once they had their heads on with regards to what the priority should be, then we checked their SaaS and their firewalls to just see how easy it was to get in. Lots of great findings there, incidentally. But that was kind of a three-step process. Then engaged with them as a CISO to now start working with them. And at first, it's only 5 hours a month. Some companies, they'll want us for more than that initially, and then we kind of spin it down a little bit. But that's fundamentally a good way to go about it is get an assessment. As you mentioned, if you've got internal staff that can do it, great. It's always nice to have those third eyes come in aren't really invested and can objectively say, hey, we want to help you and here's what we're seeing. And then write that down. Then you run some of the vulnerability assessments from a technology perspective, which may involve penetration testing. And then three, leasing that CISO guidance, which doesn't cost. I mean, Earl, imagine what you have to pay a $250,000 a year CISO every month to keep that guy happy, right? And we can come in for a couple thousand or less for a few hours a month and help them provide the governance. So that's a great plan. There are other things, for example, reviewing the cybersecurity policy, reviewing supplier security and supply chain security. Those are all things that a CISO can help an organization to do.
Yeah, that's a really important point, actually. And you bring up so much, so many little nuggets. There's a lot of them I want to key in on and, forget about them. But one of the considerations that leaves so many so many businesses vulnerable is that they are interacting with other vendors or partners or downline, distributors that are holding data and are potentially placing their data at risk. And so when you've got an organization that has a good cyber governance program, you see now, and you and I see with our clients quite often, that these larger organizations are asking before they'll even sign the contract with you, right? They're asking for a third party attestation of your cyber hygiene, right? And that's something that as organizations, we need to start to think about, even smaller organizations, right? I'm interacting with these dozen different vendors that are holding pieces of my client or employee data. And as such, I need to make sure that they're adhering to the proper, data security policies, that they are being good stewards of the data that I am letting them hold, right? So that's a very important item. So we've talked about here, doing a risk assessment, putting together some policies, right? Most organizations don't even have those policies. They don't have an acceptable use policy. They don't have a mobile device policy. They don't have a password policy. They don't have, you know, an incident response policy, nor is anybody educated on the incident response policy. And what do we do if we are breached, right? What do we do if we are encrypted and nobody can work? Literally, you know, last week we went to a business here in Utah who got a ransomware and had been down 2 weeks before they called.
Wow.
2 weeks, they were non-operational. And I'm talking about a business that transacts hundreds of thousands of dollars a day, okay? They had already lost millions of dollars of revenue in 2 weeks because they were non-operational due to a ransomware. They had no incident response plan. They didn't know what to do. And they took 2 weeks before they reached out to us. And so, you know, those scenarios are, you know, generally scenarios where we can help an organization within 24, 48, 72 hours at least get operational, and then begin to, you know, figure out all of these other components so that it doesn't happen to them again. And if it, you know, if they do have some sort of other incident, they know what to do about it and they can be, you know, get operational again. So here's an important point that I want to key in on that you briefly mentioned, and we have a lot of SaaS and tech companies here in Utah. We know that we're a thriving, you know, tech and startup market right now. And I think there's a significant gap of understanding of security in tech companies, and particularly in SaaS. And I think this because we get glimpses inside of them very often, and I know you do as well. Let's talk a little bit about SaaS platform and software security and database security. These are things that these organizations often don't think about or even know that we have loopholes. We have gaps and vulnerabilities in our code, in our data, our backend databases, in our cloud infrastructure, right? So let's talk about that. What have you seen there, Greg?
Well, I'll tell you when the security question hits them, Earl, and we're talking SaaS platforms, is as they go upstream and they land a big client, and the client says, "We need to see your penetration test." And they kind of go, "Hey, we haven't had one," you know. And so they'll reach out to us and say, "We need a pen test, and we need it fast."
Yeah.
And so, you know, they need that attestation. But web application testing is it's critical. So the overall security is one thing, but that component, that's the front line, right? That's the portal they're providing, the service they're providing. Often it has PII, or your personally identifiable information, or your health information. So fintech, we even get a lot of clients, Earl, that are collection agencies and law firms. Why? Because they're taking in data into their systems. But anyway, digressing here, back to web applications, there is so much that can go wrong. There's a whole category of injection errors. There's SQL injection and LDAP injection and CGI cross-site scripting, all of which are fundamentally where you can inject code that does bad stuff and gives you access sometimes not only to the server, but allows you to deposit malware, exfiltrate information. And so testing that with not just running a scan, right, but getting an engineer who's certified, and this is where I should probably define what a pen test is. We defined what a CISO is. A pen test is a real-world simulated attack conducted by a highly experienced individual that's a white hat hacker, right? Yeah. They know what they're doing. They presumably know how to document and take screenshots, so they're very professional, and then they can get on the phone with the client and debrief it and say, here's why the input validation is bad on this particular field, because I was able to guess your password running another tool called John the Ripper, and I was able to get into your system. So with these SaaS companies, if they haven't bumped up against a client that's going to say, "Hey, we need to see your pen test," they will. And before they even get there, why risk it? Get the test. Make sure that all of the and you know, Earl, we never do a pen test, but what there's at least a medium risk vulnerability. And that means that something that if someone persists long enough, they can get in and cause a significant amount of damage, man-in-the-middle attacks and things of that nature. They do take some effort, but having those vulnerabilities means that you can be hacked. So that's critical. And that leads to another discussion, and that is DevSecOps and code review and things of that nature. I don't even know if we have time for that, but a lot of times these companies, they'll go to reputable places like SolutionStream or others that are great companies, or they'll do it in-house, and they'll build this great operational platform, but perhaps they haven't taken into consideration the development security operations that's part of that, or DevSecOps. Right.
Yep.
And so there are tools, there are scanning tools and policies and practices that they can use as they go along. And it doesn't replace having a pen test at the end. That's kind of the end game. But what it does is it ensures that the code that's deployed is going to have less loopholes in it. So it's important to have a DevSecOps policy, number one, and number two, to have an annual penetration test at least.
Yeah. Really, really important points. And I think if I could give a piece of advice, and you and I, you know, Greg, we interact often with local, you know, startups and SaaS companies. And we see a lot of these brand new startups that you've got a technical co-founder who is, you know, default named the CTO, but they're also burdened as the CIO and the CISO. And while very talented technology designers and architects and very innovative and creative people, and you know, they're amazing developers, sometimes they don't understand that DevSecOps component, and they don't take into consideration. So if I could give a piece of advice, first it would be, when you're developing your programs, do the proper research into your language, into your database engines, into your cloud platforms to understand what your vulnerabilities are and where, you know, what code and databases and cloud services you can use that are going to be the most secure for your platform. And then second of all, understand that if you don't keep that all up to date and patched, you're going to continue to have vulnerabilities. And so you need to assess those vulnerabilities. You need to have a good patch policy that is being executed, but you also need to assess those vulnerabilities on regular occasion. Again, going back to that pen test, but a web app, you know, or an application pen test, because we're talking about, you know, if we're doing something comprehensive here, you're talking about IT infrastructure, but you're also talking about a SaaS company with their own web app, right? And those penetration testing, those two different things are very different, right? And understanding the security vulnerabilities of each of those are very different, you know, things. And so that would be a piece of advice I would offer. So Greg, we're winding down on the hour here. This has been a really constructive, fun conversation.
It has.
But maybe if you can just give some final parting thoughts. What are some final recommendations that you would have? What are some things that you think can help, you know, our fellow business leaders and, you know, our startup community out there to understand what their risks are and to mitigate those risks?
Sure. I'll key off something you said there, Earl, with evaluating the platform. So I'm going to speak directly to so many of our colleagues here in Silicon Slopes. We've got so many wonderful technology companies. I just met with one of them, Wistic, today. Wonderful assessment platform. They're doing some wonderful things that plays in with what we do, Earl, very, very well. But that's the tip of the iceberg. There are some marvelous companies out there. So here's the advice. Don't assume that because you're putting your SaaS or your infrastructure in AWS or Azure or Google Cloud, that means you're safe. Don't assume because they can produce their own SOC 2 certificate or ISO 27001 that means that you're certified. Because guess what? You're the one that basically, you meaning the founders or the technologists of these organizations, you're the ones that decide what the access control is. You decide which technologies you're implementing for security, whether or not there's dual factor authentication, whether it's turned on and implemented properly, whether there's vulnerabilities in the code, which no technology really fixes if you've left windows open or doors that can be kicked in just by a toddler. So don't assume that because you're using high volume platforms, and really, Earl, let's call it what it is, right? AWS and Microsoft Azure were designed for quick deployment, high availability, high elasticity, and high throughput. Am I wrong?
No. Ease of use, not necessarily with security at the forefront.
Yeah. Now, they've got some great security tools. You've got, sure, you know, things like CloudTrail and Cloudflare, and on the Microsoft side, Active Directory in the cloud. You've got to be able to identify objects and things. And I could go on. Yeah. Microsoft is developing some SOC services and Microsoft ecosystem ways to monitor and alert. But the reality is you can't assume that just because you're deploying it in those platforms and even deploying some of those tools that you're secure. Everything that we've talked about, from policy, practice, and procedure, authentication and access and change control and management, you're the one that's managing that technology. You're the one that's responsible for it. So I guess that's my advice, is don't make assumptions. Make yourself secure. Get the professionals or hire a CISO to manage a cybersecurity program so that you're not the CEO that says you did nothing, therefore you're liable.
Yeah, really good advice. Really good advice. Greg, this has been a fascinating, fun conversation. I want to thank you for your time today. I hope that you know, the viewers, the guests today have had a good time. I hope that they've, you know, learned a lot of valuable things. I certainly have. Literally, this was full of tons and tons of nuggets. I sat here and took a lot of notes, you know, of great things to keep in mind. So, you know, thank you again.
You're welcome.
This has been wonderful. Yeah.
We'll reach out again in your elite CISO group in February when my VP of Engineering presents.
I meant to mention that, yes, and I'm glad that you reminded me. So if you are an IT leader in Utah and you want to be part of an elite group that is going to be collaborating on topics like this and creating community, reach out to me. You can find me on LinkedIn at Earl Foote. You can reach out to my friend Greg Johnson, CEO of WebCheck Security. You know, we can talk a little bit more about that group called Elite that is going to be launching next year. Greg, why don't you tell people how to get a hold of you and where to find you?
Sure. Thanks, Earl. It's best place is just webchecksecurity.com. They can email us there or get in touch at webchecksecurity.com. That's get in touch at webchecksecurity.com. And we'll respond ASAP.
And one other quick mention is just connect with Greg and I on LinkedIn, follow, you know, our content, the content that our companies are producing. I know I follow your content, Greg. Both of us are trying to add value to the community. We're trying to produce good, actionable, educational, you know, information and content on a daily, if not weekly basis. And so, you know, that's a good place to stay up to date with what's happening in the industry and to continually understand where your vulnerabilities potentially lie. One last reminder, join myself next month on December 8th with my friend Nate Spears, co-founder of ClearSource. Nate and I are going to be talking about the lessons that we didn't learn in the MBA program, the leadership lessons we didn't learn in the MBA program. Some of those hard knocks that come when you actually start being an entrepreneur and start, you know, having team that you're trying to lead and trying to develop products and services and all of those things that you know, school can never prepare you for. So it's going to be a really fun conversation, and Nate has amazing insights. Very, very, very bright guy, just like yourself, yeah. Greg. So thank you again. We're going to sign off, and we'll see you all on December 8th at 3 p.m.
Thank you, Earl. Thanks,
my
all.
Friend.